Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Ernest, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors. And it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now.
For today's story is a teachable moment.
Yeah.
But it's actually...
It's a little different for us.
It's pretty sad.
Yeah.
Most of the story times are like upbeat.
Yeah.
But this is a story, and it's definitely a teachable moment.
Absolutely.
It's a story to learn from, but it's not really the most...
Yeah. I think most of our stories, there's always like a triumph, and it's like, oh, wow, I can't believe they came from those odds to do this, or they used their intelligence, their network to do that. And this one's a little different.
Yeah, but it's still a story that needs to be told.
Absolutely.
Nonetheless.
We can learn from the mistakes.
Yes. So, Wally Amos Jr.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. So most people, if you heard of the cookies, Famous Amos,
yeah,
that's That's him.
Probably known for that.
Yeah, probably known for that. Yeah. But I didn't actually know. I was doing some research, so I know he did that. But what I didn't know was that in 1962, he became the first black talent agent with William Morris Agency.
Yep.
And he had Diana Ross and the Supremes, Marvin Gaye, Sam Cooke.
Yeah. Yeah, and he had Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, yeah, those were all
big time.
Yeah, that was pretty extremely big. Like, yeah. Like think about like Diana Ross, Marvin Gaye, and Sam Cooke.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
If I like, who does that? Who finds that type of talent?
Yeah. So, but he was raised in Tallahassee, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Tallahassee. Tally Ho is what they call it.
That's from the Florida days.
FAMU, Tallahassee Community College, Florida State University.
Yep.
It's a college town. Shout out to Tallahassee. So he's from Tallahassee. He's born in 1936.
That was like, what?
He's still living.
Still living, man. Still living. Still going. Shout out to him.
You know, come from a southern background, and his aunt apparently made homemade cookies.
Aunt Della.
Yeah, yeah. That was famous in the neighborhood, and everybody loved it.
Yep.
And, you know, just a traditional type of just in the kitchen, just making cookies.
Making chocolate chip cookies, man.
So that never really left him, even though he went to, you know, pursue a career in, you know, managing artists and things of that nature, and eventually went to Hollywood, but he always had his down south roots of cooking.
Yeah, that actually was what he would give to some of his artists. He would present them with cookies. Like, so like some of the artists would come and he had like a snack. Before there was writers and you had to have all those things, like he would bring the cookies to them.
Yeah, and he actually went to culinary school also.
Yeah, man.
Before he became a talent agent, he went to culinary school.
It was no joke.
So yeah, so like you said, he used to gift his clients cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of branched off to people saying like he should probably start his own company. Like,
yeah, and those same clients who, you know, that he brought the talent from, they became people that like, listen, we love what you got. We love the product. We're going to help you. We're going to become investors.
Investors.
Yeah,
yep.
Man, that's important.
That's a fact. Cause it started cause yeah, what he was doing, William Morris, he tried to branch off and do his own thing with that. And that didn't really work out.
Right.
So the relationships that he established, they said that they would bankroll him. So it cost $25,000, which was a lot of money in 1975.
It's a lot of money now, man.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? 1975, that's like a couple hundred thousand.
Yeah.
And that's where he started his company with.
Yeah. I think Marvin Gaye was the first guy to say like, I'm gonna help this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He started his company with, what you called Famous Amos.
Mm-hmm.
And first year in business, $300,000.
So that's crazy. I read that. I said, wait, that 375?
Yeah.
He's multi.
Nah, he was good. So he hit it out the park right away.
Yep.
And by 1982, he did $12 million in revenue.
Yeah, so after the first store, he started franchising. He was on Sunset Boulevard in Cali, man. Dude was doing it big, but he started franchising the stores out and generated some more income.
Yeah, so he really became a big name, a household name. He you know, he's in the Smithsonian Institute. Yeah, he has his hat and his shirt.
I saw his commercials, man. He said like he got so good at selling cookies because he used to have to pitch talent to record labels.
And he had the relationships.
Yeah.
And it was a good product too. Famous Amos cookies was legit.
They still legit.
Yeah, I'm saying.
I mean, they changed the recipe, but it's still legit.
So in 1982, he's $12 million. So like I said, $12 million in the early 80s, probably the equivalent of $40 million now, like a lot.
He's big time.
That's a lot of money, right? So he became a household name and he starts to, you know, buy property and he's living the high life, right? So in 1985, that's when things start to kind of fall apart.
Yeah, story changes.
So he still did pretty decent that year, but they made $10 million instead of $12 million. So now he's, you know, it's a loss. Like first year when he's starting to like go backwards. He was going up and then now he's starting to like go down a little bit, right?
Right.
So he makes some changes. He fires some managers and puts some other people in positions. So he said admittedly, like he didn't really understand how to run business. He's a talent agent and he's a cook.
To his own credit, admittedly. Yeah. I don't know how to run a business.
But he didn't have any mentorship. And even his people that he's around are artists and things of that nature. He didn't really know what was going on. So it's all good.
Made $12 million. I don't know how to run a business. That's astonishing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And it's crazy, too, because remember we interviewed Ryan Leslie.
Yeah.
And he said that, you know, scaling can be, like, detrimental to you. Like, if you're not properly prepared and you're growing too fast, that can actually hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually better to have a smaller audience or to grow at a slower pace, but to be able to manage it. Because like when you can't manage your scale, now you're really screwed.
Yeah, that's his whole blueprint too. That's Ryan Leslie's blueprint that even with the smartphone was like, yo, smaller audience, larger payout.
Yeah, and that's what he said like before, like less is more sometimes.
Yeah.
So Now he starts to like just fall apart. He's on vacation and he finds out that he has a house in Hawaii. Shout out to all the good people of Hawaii.
He lives there now.
Aloha, mahalo. Does he still live there
now? Yeah, he lives there now.
Yeah, everybody knows I used to live in Hawaii.
Tell him again.
The whole vibe out there. So he finds out that his house is actually being auctioned off.
Yeah.
Like that's crazy. That's a crazy news to just wake up to. Like, oh, by the way, they auctioned your house at 3 p.m. Like, what? He didn't even know his house was in foreclosure. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, when did this happen?
This is no laughing matter. We're making light of it, but it's no laughing matter.
Crazy. It's just crazy. So it's like, but you know, once again, that just goes to show you, like, especially like a lot of celebrities, and you know, like even like the Fat Joe situation, people know like he went to jail for tax evasion, but yeah, he was telling his story. It was like he had his accountant that was paying all his bills for him,
yeah,
and you know, he's being a rapper, and he felt like, you know, he's not really paying attention to that stuff.
We saw that with Jim Jones, like
a couple months ago.
Yeah, he lived a house in Jersey.
Kevin Garnett, a bunch of them. So what happens with Fat Joe is that the accountant apparently started like embezzling, stealing money, not paying his taxes, not paying his bills. He found out because he was like, he always had excellent credit. He tried to get a car and it was like his credit was like 450, and he was like, what? And then he realized that all of his bills haven't been paid for months.
Yeah.
And also along with bills, they had his accountant never paid his taxes. He had to do like 6 months in federal jail. So I say, I have to say, this is something that's unfortunate. It's been going on for a long period of time where people like put trust in other people to take care of their finances, and they don't know what's going on with their own money.
Yeah.
And by the time they realize it, it's too late.
Yeah, we see it happen too much, man. Yeah. Way too much.
So that was just like when he realized, like, okay, things is really starting to go down crazy. Yeah. So now he's scrambling, and he brings outside investors in to like help out with his company. Yeah. Because now he's starting to lose money
to the famous company.
Yeah, yeah. So he took, I think, like $3 million of investors' money.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't really work out. But those are loans, so now he has to pay that back. But then they left, and then the company's losing even more money.
Yeah.
So now it's like spiraling out of control at a very rapid pace.
And what are you gonna do when that happens?
Yeah. So in 1988, he sells the company to $3 million. He sells it for $3 million. He sells the company in 1988 to the Shansby Group. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, for $3 million. So the crazy thing about it is that now he sells the company for $3 million. And they keep him on as a brand ambassador.
Yeah.
So he makes a deal with them, and he's not allowed to use his name anymore.
Yeah, because part of the sell is the trademark.
Yep. Yeah. So Famous and Amos.
Yeah.
He can't, his name
he can't use.
Can't use his name.
Yeah.
Can't use it. So, but he can, so it's crazy. So he built the company from scratch, from nothing, yeah, right? Built it to a multi-multi-million-dollar corporation, sells it for way less than what it was valued for just a few years earlier.
He was hurting.
Not only do they tell him that you can't use your name, but they give him a job,
yeah,
to be the spokesperson
for the company
of the name that he can't use.
Yeah.
So he's doing that. Which is, has to be extremely hard. Like, think about that. Like, think about, like, you start a company named Troy's Sneakers.
Yeah.
Right? You love sneakers, and you build it to a multi-multi-million-dollar company.
We'll take
and
that.
And then 10 years down the line, you got to sell it. And they're saying, you can't use Troy, you can't use sneakers anymore, but we want to pay you a salary to go around the country promoting Troy's Sneakers.
Yeah. I mean, he found out about it when he tried to start a new cookie company.
Well, we're going to get to that. So after a while, it's like, it's not, after years, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And he leaves. And he's like, he tries to start a new company, and they sue him.
They're like, no, you can't use that name.
For, yeah,
we trademark own it.
Infringement.
You that can't. Was part of the sale.
So then he starts the company called Uncle No Name.
Yeah, Uncle No Name's Gourmet.
Yeah, which is a play on that he has no name now. It's really unfortunate. This is really, really tragic.
It's a tragic tale.
It's really a tragic situation all the way around, man. So Uncle No Name, he starts that brand.
Mm-hmm.
So the crazy thing about it is that as he's doing the Uncle No Name, the company gets sold.
This is the worst part.
Again.
Yeah, it's the worst part.
So
this is the worst part of the story.
So now, because he even said like he had depression for a little bit. He stopped baking at all for like 3 years because Uncle No Name didn't work out really.
Yeah, I think they started making muffins. He went away from cookies.
So he stopped baking. He cut his beard off. His whole thing with trademark was his beard and a hat.
Mm-hmm.
He stopped wearing a hat, cut his beard off. He didn't even want people to recognize him in the street.
Yeah.
It's like,
I don't want them to see me like this.
Depressing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what I'm saying? So, but as all of that's going on, Shansby, the company that he sold to for $3 million in 1992, they sold it
a company for, we might have heard of.
Yeah. $61
million. Yeah. Kellogg.
To Kellogg.
Yeah, big breakfast company, man.
So yeah, they sell it. He sells it. They sell it for $61 million in 1992. And then it gets sold again in 1998 to Keebler.
Crazy.
That's what the Elf.
Yeah. Keebler Cookies is that.
Yeah. So then in 1998, Keebler decides to bring him back as a brand ambassador. It done got flipped five times already. It got flipped five times.
You know what they did? You know, he said when he came back, it hurt his heart. I mean, he tried the cookies, but they changed his recipe and all that.
No, they changed the recipe.
Disrespect, like the everything.
Oh man, they let so, but at least he was able to work a deal out where he made a deal with Keebler for Uncle Wally's muffins.
Yeah.
So they let him have a subsidiary company within the company.
Yeah, it didn't work out that well
muffins,
either.
Things of that nature.
Yeah.
And now he gives speeches. He's still alive.
Yeah, he's still alive. He's still out and I think he was living in Hawaii, and now I think he's back in South Carolina. He's back south. But he's still making cookies. He's still making cookies. I think the original idea came from his Aunt Della. And so that's what he's going back to. His new company is Aunt Della's Cookies. So, because he can't use Famous Amos.
So, I mean, moral of this story, it's so many different morals of this story.
It's a lot,
lesson
man.
Points and learning points. It's just like, where do you begin? But I think the first one is business. Everything is a business. Like, a lot of times people look at it like, I'm a good chef or I'm a recording artist. How many times is like, that's not good enough?
Yeah.
You got to be able to understand that no matter what you're doing, there's a business behind it.
Yeah. I mean, just think about it. If he had licensed his name instead of selling it in that deal,
he could have done that.
You know what I mean? Like, his fortune would have been a lot different, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, he's done now. He can't even use his own name.
You can't. And it's like mismanagement. It's a lot of people say a lot of times, like, ignorant is bliss. It's really not. It's extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to business. And like, we did an episode on trademarks and licensing.
Yeah, shout out to Sabine.
And the legal side of it is extremely important as well, right? Yeah. Like, the people understand that. Like, you got to understand the legal side, or to have a lawyer at least to help you. And it's important to, people get taken advantage of.
Right. You think he would have, I mean, if he sold it for $3 million, right? Like, what did he get the proper valuation? Did he even know what a valuation was at that point?
Oh, he probably just needed the money.
I just needed some money, I'm going to sell it.
Like, you sold it at $3 million, then 10 years later, it gets sold for $61 million, and you can't even use your name.
Nah, man, it's crazy.
Yeah. It's like I said, man, it's a tragic, sad learning experience, but nonetheless, it's still a learning experience that I think entrepreneurs, business people, inspiring entrepreneurs, inspiring business people can learn from. You gotta learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, and he still has his health at the end of the day. He's still alive and breathing to tell the lesson. So, I mean, at the end of the day, somebody gonna learn from his mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the worst thing in the world, for somebody to take your name. You can't use it. Like, that's like...
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it broke his heart. He tasted the cookies. He's like, yo, they changed the recipe. Nothing's the same, but his name, it lives on. Like, we talked about the vending machine episode. Like, those are still in vending machines right now. Like, today, somebody's eating Famous Amos cookies.